How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Sunday Papers Podcast, it's only fuel for the flames.
Hit clap. 3, 2, 1.
Read all about it. Read all about it.
Yeah, that first one.
How many
are
from?
Weak. Oh, Jesus, that's
what
loud.
Fucking city am I in? I am in Tacoma, Washington, which is
Tacoma.
Tacoma, baby.
Tacoma's been in a song, hasn't it? Hello, listeners.
Is it Tacoma
viewers?
Lineman? What was the Wichita lineman?
No. Like Tacoma's in one of those that lists a lot of cities. Tacoma.
All right. Don't be the guy who's on his phone during the podcast so he doesn't hear what his partner is saying this week.
Listen. All right. I found it. Well, Blue Tacoma. But listen, I did want to say something. I'm not going to be the guy on my phone who doesn't listen this week.
Okay, good. I don't even know what city I'm in anymore. I'm on the road literally every week for the next 4 months. Every weekend.
Tacoma, you know what it is? It's lyrical sounding. Good word. That's all I got. All right.
It was in Take It Easy. All the way to
Arizona.
Tacoma, Philadelphia, Atlanta, LA.
That's not Take It Easy.
Yeah, it is.
Is it?
No. Northern California all the way to Tacoma.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
All right. Let's get to it. Last night was
Take It Easy. All right, go.
That is You Take It Easy.
Isn't that sounds like the guy from Detroit.
Bob Seger?
Yeah, Steve Miller Band. Rockin' me. I mean,
Take It Easy, I think,
is all Arizona-based, I think.
We are exactly 2 minutes and 21 seconds into the podcast on the first correction.
And look at your confidence with it.
Can we talk about your new job?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, let's talk
about
it.
It's not big. I mean, I don't want to talk about it. It's not big, but we're with Jeff Ross, we're roasting the year. It's going to be on Netflix. It's going to be an hour or less. You know, it's not the bar is much lower. It's not a Brady roast. And Jeff and a bunch of comics, I think, are going to roast the year. And it might be called What an Effing Year. Something like that.
Okay.
Let's try not to curse for the algorithm today.
So the hope is that this will become something that's done yearly.
I could do that.
Okay.
I got another 3 years in me, I think.
I love it. And you get to work from home, so you're writing from your own home. How is that? Is it tough between bouts of masturbation to actually have to write a little bit?
Bout is a perfect word for it. I feel pretty beat up, especially on the inside. Well, we're going into an office, and it's the reason I got a scooter is it's all the way near Netflix, which is Sunset near the 101. It's like East Hollywood, if you will. And there is no easy way to get there.
Do you get on the highway?
I do if there's traffic. You know, I do not get on the 10 when there's no traffic and everyone's going 80.
Do you split lanes?
Yes. But I don't go more than like 30 miles an hour when I do that. I take it down to USC sometimes. It's funny. I did Kilborn's podcast, and he was fascinated with this because I met him at Rayo's. We talked all about you and your dad. And we met him at Rayo's. Rayo's was so great in Hollywood. By the way, I pull up on my scooter because otherwise it's 90 minutes to get to Hollywood for dinner. So I pull up on my scooter and I see a really big dude getting out of a very like old, like a Cadillac or some Coupe de Ville type. And some coupe. And I'm like, oh man, that's, and he looks Italian. I'm like, that's pretty authentic. And he goes in. So I meet Kilborn at the bar, and then and we have a booth in the bar, and it's the most New York scene. Like they're playing the American Standards, Sinatra, everything. And it's great. And he goes, hey, do you see Johnny Roast Beef? And I look, and of course, with that name, I'm like, you mean him? Because who else could it be? And it was the big guy. He's the guy from Goodfellas that I think bought a Cadillac. I might have this wrong. I think he was buying a Cadillac too early.
Oh, and they yeah.
Yeah, he's a greeter. That's my name for it, at Rayo's.
Oh, no. That guy's famous. He was, my father knew him when he was a door guy. His name is... Oh, I'm forgetting. What's that?
No. I was going to say Johnny.
I forget his name.
I think his middle name is Rose.
He was famous because, you know, he was hanging out. He was the door guy. And then, like, De Niro would come in and Pacino and Scorsese. And they all loved this guy because he was the guy they were trying to write in their scripts. And so he started getting work. They would just bring him in as an actor on stuff. And he's been in like a bunch of those movies. I think he was in Goodfellas. I know he's in Goodfellas. I think he was in Bronx Tale.
Johnny Williams is his name.
Yeah, he's been in Bronx Tale. And yeah.
God, look at this. Look when he's younger. He looks so much like Artie used to look like. Look at that.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So, listen, I'm not dinging the guy, but he floats around. As close as that guy can get to floating. And he'll come by your table and check on you. And after he left, I just looked at Craig. I'm like that is like an animatronic. It's like he's on a track, like in a, and it's a small world after all. And he's one of these animatronic. And he comes over. He's like, forget about it. You got the prosciutto. You know, like, get out of here. You know, like he's yeah, loaded with all his little sayings. And then he goes to the next table and you hear the same banter. But we
amazing.
Talked about Arthur Avenue up in the Bronx. He loved hearing that, you know, my parents and me are from the Bronx. Really, my parents. I was there for a few months. And so anyway, yeah, that was Rayo's was great.
Yeah, when we used to go in New York, they would have a sing-along after dinner. Like they literally would sing the standards. And, you know, the owner, I'm forgetting everybody's name now. He would get up and he would kind of lead everybody and people would get up and dance. And it really was like a party. It was like a family party. It was amazing.
Yeah, and they have a big picture up of the guy you knew, the maitre d', who they put in The Sopranos. Well, here in Hollywood, they have a big picture of him up. Craig and those guys didn't even know him. Like, yeah, he's the head of, like, the FBI in The Sopranos.
Was it Jackie?
Frank.
Frank.
Frank Pellegrino, that
yep,
guy.
Frank Pellegrino, right.
So anyway, that was really fun. All right, dude, Tyson fight. Did you
Tyson
watch it?
Fight, if you can call it a fight, it looked like two guys shadow boxing, just facing each other, shadow boxing.
We just read a tweet that said the guy has seen way better fights in Waffle House.
No, it was, I mean, I didn't realize until I started watching it that there was all these regulations about they couldn't hit Tyson below the rib cage because he's got an ulcer. And,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And Paul couldn't, I forget what the phrase is, but something about where you punch from. Like, they had to be jabs or hooks or uppercuts. He couldn't throw, like, an overhand.
I didn't even know any of this.
There was Jason Paul had two timeouts if he wanted
Jake
to use
Paul,
them.
Yeah.
Jake Paul.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Well, none of those rules applied to the chicks that fought before him, and that's all anyone's talking about.
Oh, I didn't see it. Was it good?
What? Oh, if you, I don't know if your family, so when they come in, I'm like, all right, I'm not into this. I don't like, but it's, you know, I'm thinking of women cage fighting where I don't even like men cage fighting, really. And I get squeamish when I see, like, permanent damage being inflicted. These, it was, I'm not the only one. A lot of people were like, oh, my God, this is like Hagler Hearn's numbers in terms of punches and action and toe-to-toe. I'm not going to tell you anything then. You just watch it. It's, by the way, women's boxing in terms of pace is incredibly easy to watch. The rounds are only 2 minutes.
But it's also, weren't they called like ultra lightweights or something? Were they very small?
They were 122 pounds, I think. But they didn't look small.
Yeah. All right.
And one was Irish. So I go, oh, no, I don't like watching Irish people fight. Their skin cracks open the second you touch it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and Rabia's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, if you punched me in the forehead, I guarantee you there'd be a slit. It would crack.
Yeah.
And the thin, brittle Irish skin. And well, some skin does open. I don't even look it up, dude. Watch that fight. It's incredible.
Do you know how many fucking stitches me and my brother got growing up? It was like a running joke that they were going to start keeping a measurement because they'd always tell you how many inches your stitch was. I got stitches all the way across my forehead, and then the other way across my forehead. I got it from my lip to underneath my chin. I got it from my hand from here all the way down to the knuckle. I got one on my knee that's about
Good
three
Lord.
Inches long. I have two in my ass. Yeah.
Constant I grew up with a sister, stitches. So she's the one with all the stitches.
Well, you know, I was a snitch. It's my fault.
You know, nowadays, I think a parent of boys, someone I know I worked with here in Hollywood, I had boys, and I think it was the head of Liguori, who was like the head of Fox, congratulated a guy I was working with on the boys, and he's like, have you found a plastic surgeon? And the guy's like, what are you talking about? He's like, you shouldn't just let any doctor stitch him up. And he's like, stitch him up? He's like, you'll get there. Because it was like the guy's second boy. He goes, you should have a cosmetic surgeon do your son's stitches when their faces get torn apart
because
they're fighting at home.
And yeah. Owen had the same number of injuries, but they were all soccer related. He had stitches.
I remember.
His nose got exploded. He broke both wrists. He had a groin injury, ankle.
You guys both look good for that, though. I love how you said, and for the listeners, one stitch came like from the right top of the head towards the center of the eyebrows, and then the other one did. But that's like what you draw on an angry face is that little triangle that goes down to the nose, like a furrowed angry brow.
The long one was we used to rent out ice time at Boston University. We would get the midnight shift on Friday nights, and of course we would drink all night. And then we'd go, and there was nobody there, so we didn't have to wear helmets. And this kid, Jeff McClain, was turning. And as he turned, instead of keeping his stick low, he just let his stick go over his head. And it caught me right across the forehead. I got 22 stitches. I had to go to the emergency room at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
I was dragged on my birthday. And I kind of played third. I played thirds hockey in high school as a joke because we were bored and I had to play a forward because I didn't know how to skate backwards. That's the level I was at. I was dragged down to BU for one of those late night things. I still have holes in the cartilage or bone of my elbow. You can feel it. When people feel it, they're like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
I just kept falling and smashing my elbow on the ice.
That's a famous ice injury that I forget what they call it. There's a little bone in your elbow that when you smash it, it doesn't go away. I got the same thing in both
my
elbows.
It's like you can feel the hole. And then it moves around. I guess one day it'll hurt. God bless. It doesn't hurt yet. All right.
Yeah.
So the Tyson fight, Jack and I, Jack from Wyoming and I, were talking about the fight before. And he goes, he's like, no one of these younger generations can understand what it was like, the old Tyson. Like, we would pay all this money for pay-per-views. They'd be over, some of them in like one round. And so quickly, like eventually you're like, well, we don't need to get much beer or snacks because, and you'd find someone, you'd all chip in and go over a house. And he goes, I vividly remember where I was, and I do too, when Tyson was on the ground in the Buster Douglas, the first time we had ever seen him on the mat. And he's like pathetically like looking for his mouthpiece to try to get it back in. And he goes, and Jack talked about it. He's like, and I had to share the same exact view. Like, your brain was seeing something that it didn't understand. Like, wait, Tyson's down and like and knocked down and weary. And he's like, it just didn't make sense to me. And I thought about it. And I was like trying to remember, because I remember where I was and my mouth was just agape. And I'm like, and I realized the only other time I've looked at a TV and been as like confused and dumbstruck, a minute later, the second plane went into the other tower. Like, you're just staring at it doing math. Like, wait, this is, it's almost like a blip in the matrix. Like, wait, that's not happening, is it?
Yeah. The first one, you're just like, oh, it's probably Spirit Airlines, you know?
No, I was dumbstruck right before, but then you watch the second one, you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
But anyway, kids, that's how startling Tyson being knocked out was. And you know what? The generation will never understand how intimidating he was. Not anymore.
Yeah, so the fight was a fucking snore, and I was watching it in the green room between shows. And
did you have tech issues like most of America?
No, did not.
It kind
but
of crashed
I think the tech
Netflix.
Issues were for the first two fights. I don't think it happened for Tyson.
Well, we were at Penmar, and it was great. Like, but everyone was sharing headlines of Netflix is out here. My dad in Florida, he's like, is your Netflix frozen?
Damn. And also, the announcers were awful. Yeah. That post interview with Tyson where the guy was like, why were you biting your glove? It's like, shut the fuck up. What are you doing?
Yeah. He used to do that, but he was doing it a lot this time.
I know, but it's like, we know that. It's like, you know, you're going to ask him about, he didn't bite his ear. That would have been amazing if he bit his ear.
I've told this story on this podcast before, but that Holyfield fight, once again, so expensive, pay-per-view. I was out in West Hampton, and I didn't get it. But my friend upstairs was like, hey, you know, you can hear the audio. And it's, remember when things were blurred? Like, remember HBO would blur, but you'd wait. You'd try to see, like, a nipple or something dirty. So it would like, show you a little. And I don't think it was by design to tease you into buying it. I think it was just, that was the tech at that time.
It's scrambling.
Scramble was partly there. So anyway, I'm listening to it, and again, it was like the Yankees game that I listened to. I'm listening to video announcers, and they're like, oh my God, wait a minute. Did that just happen? He bit his ear. I'm like, what? What? Like, I had to listen to TV announcers describe a boxer biting an ear off twice.
Twice. Yeah. Amazing. So I'm playing in Tacoma, and I said to the club owner, because I've got some jokes that are a little bit political. I go, how does this crowd skew, like liberal or conservative? And he goes, well, I'm not gonna say the comic's name, but so and so was here last week. He did a Trump joke, and 20 people walked out of the showroom. It's like, oh fuck.
Maybe they were Mexicans, and they just walked headed towards the border. Maybe they're rapists and murderers.
But I have stuff garbage. On politics. I still did it. I don't give a shit. It was fine.
Well, his nominees, man, are fascinating.
Fascinating. We'll get to one of them later. What's the big update from the mailbox?
All right. All right. So we're going to do hats. You and I have to, like, tomorrow talk about logos and hats.
We're announcing right now there will be Sunday papers hats available. They're going to be high quality. as all of our stuff is, and it will be available for Christmas. We're going to start. Mike will not be mailing them out. We're going
to
use.
I'm sorry to say, I'm not going to be mailing them out. Now, we set up a post office box, right? And remember that Argentinian guy who some people in Argentina stole his baby? It was some crazy story.
Yeah.
So he's there. He wasn't great at communication. It's probably why they took his baby. And he no longer is the owner of this place. And I get a message, hey, your mailbox. So I go in last week. I'll tell the story in this order. I go in last week, and there's a package. But I'm like, well, my mailbox wouldn't be full. Like, they were going to start charging me storage. And we got a very nice letter. Greg, hold on. Let me reach down here. And it's, dear Greg and Mike, I wanted to thank you for the great job you do every week with Sunday Papers. I'm often in my classroom or something working or Sunday working, and your show puts me in a great frame of mind to start the week. Enclosed are pictures of Miles Davis that my father took at a club in Kansas City in 1952. A then 26-year-old Miles Davis was going through a lot at that time, so there are not that many pictures of him during this period. I have heard you guys reference him, and I thought you would enjoy these. Best of luck with everything you do. Take it, Ish. And it's from Doug. I could read his whole name, but we'll just say Doug. And he sent us two pictures, Greg, of Miles Davis in this Kansas City club.
Wow. He looks so young. 56, that was?
I think so, if I read it right.
Damn. Looks like a baby.
No, I know. Let's see here.
And he was well, he was born in 26, so he was 30 years old.
I believe it's 52 that he wrote. Yeah, I imagine it's 52. And he's 26
wow.
years old.
Wow, no shit.
So that's really nice, and I meant it, and I got that like 2 weeks ago. So anyway, I'll get you one of those. Then I get a notice again. Yeah, your mailbox is still full. I'm like, what do you mean still full? So I go back. Okay, we'll go into this next week. They have this big bag. It is full of returned koozies.
What?
Full of returned. I'll read out the names last week. Here's Andrew. I don't even know what city they covered it up. Everything. There's Christmas cards to us, I think. Oh, this Argentinian, I'm glad they took his baby. Bree from Huntington Beach. Allison from Toronto. When's the date on this? December 2023. We got like nice Huntington Beach loves you. So I'm gonna read these a little bit next week. And also I'll make sure everyone who's returned koozie I address.
Well, do you think some of those returned koozies are people that reached out to you and said I never got my koozie and then you sent them?
Oh no, I think most of them are. And then I resent them.
Yeah.
It depended on the mailbox. Some people really flagged me for one stamp. You know what I mean? Like it needs more. Some were like address doesn't work, but return to sender, unclaimed, unable to forward. You know, that's one. That's not on me. unable
you
to forward.
You sure you don't
want to
send out the hats, Matt? Mike, you got Matt. Is I going to get a correction on that? How?
On what?
You got time. I mean, you're only head writing a job for the next month. Why not do the hats?
I came up with, I thought, a good joke the other day, which was, what a year. Some shooter tried to kill Trump, and they immediately knew it wasn't Alec Baldwin, because he missed. What a year. You see, I did two stories in one.
There you go.
We'll read those next week, but thank you for the nice cards. We're going to read those also.
The logo this week, I picked this one from Lawrence Tarpey, who he sent this a long time ago, but it's a boxing one. It's Ali punching the two of us in the face. Thank you, Lawrence.
And I just sent you an Ali clip.
Emmett Hall did the song this week. Emmett Hall, I got to meet last night. He lives... I don't know where he lives, but he was at the show here in Tacoma, and he came down, and I gave him a hug. I thanked him for all the work he's done over the years for us. Gave him a couple. He tried to pay me for the pins. I said, "Emmett, you don't. Here's a message. Anybody that's going to write songs for us, come to my live show. I will give you a pin. How about that?
Oh my God! Yeah, are you kidding me?
We got some corrections. The show F Kevin is actually called Kevin Can Go F Himself. Greg said Christina.
I love it.
And Greg said Christina Applegate is the star. Christina Applegate is not the star, nor has she ever been on the show. Annie Murphy of Schitt's Creek fame is in it, and she
is
wonderful.
That actually. Yeah.
I've seen a clip. We got a number of people correcting me on that one.
All right, can I read an email that you forwarded me just to follow up on koozies? This is from our buddy John Favreau, the less famous one. The subject is a rag. Yes, Greg, a rag is what's holding my water bottle in the cup holder of my school bus driving down these tough, rough main roads. And why? Because Mike refuses to send me the koozie that I won months ago in the cartoon caption contest. Why, oh, why does Mike hate me so? Tell him for me that I'm on the rag, please. I love that email. You'll get it. They're coming. They're coming.
And by the way, I should point out right now, if you want to buy koozies for Christmas, like you did last year, Mike is home. He's available. He will send out koozies right away for Christmas. Go to fitzdog.com. I know this is not the best sales pitch after all the returned koozies. But
no, if
I
you
think
order now, I can guarantee delivery by mid-January.
Guarantee.
No, I'll get them out. I will. I got the system down now, man. I got new envelopes. They don't get returned.
All right. Another correction. Dodges Hodges said, I live in Oakland, and while it has its problems, women are most certainly not being killed constantly, he put in quotes. I'm a community. Did we say that?
Which correction is Oakland?
Yeah, did we say women in Oakland? Well, maybe it had to do with that serial killer, with the Zodiac killer.
Oh, maybe.
But that was back in the 60s. Anyway, sorry, Dodges Hodges. We did not mean to besmirch Oakland. Louis Lush said, Ruth Bader Ginsburg retiring from the Supreme Court wouldn't have mattered. There was already an empty seat that Obama had been trying to fill, and the melting turtle that is Mitch McConnell blocked every nominee in the Senate. RBG did what she could for as long as she could, and retirement wouldn't have made any difference unless she had retired.
That's very debatable.
Under Clinton, 25 years before she passed. I'll see you in Cleveland in December. All right, Louis, you got yourself a pin coming.
Louis's right if he thinks she retired at the end. But if it was earlier, they can only block nominees so long.
Al said in talking about Sesame Street this past Sunday, Mike referred to Elmo as emo.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to stick with it.
Secondly, you overlooked the passing of Phil motherfucking Lesh.
You know what? AI or Al, if that's your real name, you're right. And we put him in the obituary today.
Chris Elzinga said, finally saw your special. It's outstanding. A sketch in the last SNL reeks of being ripped off by a staff member who saw your special, namely the section about dads sharing their feelings with their sons through the lens of football talk. I was so irate. It was Bill Burr's episode of SNL, so I watched it. And
I haven't seen it yet. Oh, shit. Is it really?
Dude, it is exactly my bit. And this has happened with SNL a number of times. I think their writers just, they listen to podcasts, they watch specials, and I think they're so desperate and they're so in fear of not getting things on, they just fucking steal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have your, and all, they are desperate is an understatement. They're terrified they're going to be fired. They need to come up with, they have to get sketches on to earn their keep. Well, I told you I was, and I'm not saying he ever heard me do it or anything, but Jim Jeffries, who I love and I know, not well, but like we played that 18 holes in the charity golf together and all this. And I had a bit I really love that you've seen me do, which is how late we invented wheeled luggage. And I had my examples of the smartest men in the world also didn't figure it out. And like they're going lugging the Manhattan Project through airports and carrying it. And, you know,
hilarious.
And meanwhile, there's dollies and he did exactly that. And I don't remember if I said it when we were playing golf or whatever, but I knew I had gotten a low hanging fruit. And when you get one of those, you know, you're very excited about it. Like, how has no one talked about that it was like the 1980s before someone patented a wheeled suitcase? Anyway.
Well, here's something that wasn't low-hanging fruit. I had a whole routine where I was going on stage and I was doing Bill Cosby's bits. And the premise was, fuck him. Like, what could hurt a comedian more than stealing their material? And he was in court at this point. Anyway, Daniel Tosh then did the exact bit on Tosh.0. And then I know a writer on the show who said to me, they brought up that Greg Fitzsimmons is doing this bit. And he goes, well, who cares? My show's bigger, or I'm bigger. So wow. There you go. He also said The Summer of Love was actually 1967, not 1969.
A lot of people on the YouTube comments pointed out the same thing. And I should have flagged that because I was born in the spring of Summer of Love. It was the first time I was ever early.
I think I was thinking that 69 might have been the summer that they did the Monterey Jazz
Love.
Pop Festival. Let me.
What
just
was think. Was 69 Woodstock?
No, that was 70.
Oh.
Wait, let me. Or maybe that was 69. Monterey Jazz Pop. Oh no, it was 67. Okay. And Woodstock was.
Look at this.
Woodstock was 69. All right, so Woodstock was 69. Maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Although Monterey Jazz Pop was the reason why Woodstock happened, because it was so beautiful and peaceful and amazing that Woodstock decided to try to do the same thing. And then, of course, all hell broke loose. And then I think the what was the one at the racetrack?
Altamont.
Then Altamont happened, where there was murder and violence.
You know, I am finding Summer of Love also tagged to 1969.
Yeah. And then there was, of course, that horrible song, Summer of 69. Was that Don Henley? It was one of the Eagles.
You're joking, right?
No.
It's what's his name? It was a shockingly large amount of hits. Brian Adams.
Oh, really?
Dude, okay. I hate to say it.
He could have been an Eagle. He's bad enough to have been an Eagle.
So you're not going to go to the Sphere and see the Eagles?
I can't. What are they going to put up in the background? People yawning? People in
I think they're just
going
to put up signs to where the men's room is, because all the old fans have to go so much.
Yeah.
We won't do this now, but you know how I like to find a band, and I'm like, you could sing along to 13 or 4. Like, I did that with the Cars, and my sisters talked about going, like, she was dragged to a Hall & Oates concert, and she was like, I think I knew 22 songs.
Yeah,
it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Brian Adams is one of those guys, I hate to say it.
No shit.
No. Well, I'll make notes. We never
Dude,
follow
Dude, you
up.
Know who else is a band like that? And you're not going to believe this when I say it? Toto.
You're right. I don't believe it.
All right. Toto. They had, well, obviously they had that song, Africa.
I think they have two I know.
Nope. You know more than two of their songs.
All right. We don't have to go into it today, this week. Are Stop. You ever going on tour or what?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to go on tour. Why not? I'm going to come to Tempe, Arizona, which is in Phoenix, November 22nd to the 24th. San Francisco Punchline, December 5th through 7th. Second favorite club in the country. I fucking love this place. Let's sell it out. Tell your friends. San Francisco. Cleveland Hilarities. Haven't been back in a few years. December 13 and 14. And then in the new year, I will be in Janesville, Wisconsin, Nyack, New York, Raleigh, North Carolina, Milwaukee, Vegas, Fontana, California, Atlanta, Hamilton, Ontario, Toronto, Pittsburgh, Tampa, La Jolla. Go to fitzdog.com. Get yourself some tickets. Support live comedy. Also, if you've not seen You Know Me, my new special, it's out on YouTube. It's free. It's got 5 out of 5 reviews, star reviews. It is it's been nominated for Best Special of the Year by I forget. And
you should really print up the poster. I'm still trying to figure out what star situation you just described. Hey, Jack, you know, I talked to him this week about Tyson, but also he's like, you know, he's up in Wyoming and the winters get incredibly long there. And he's like, hey, why? He's like, Fitz is in Vegas for a week. I'm like, what? I go, I don't think so. He's like, do you listen to anything he says on the podcast? And then I go, well, look, I could look it up right now. And I went into our doc here. And it is peculiar. You're there a while, 10th through the 16th?
7 nights. I need you guys bad. If I ever needed your friendship, it's going to be a week where I am trapped in February in Vegas.
Wait, dude, like, when is the Super Bowl?
I think it's, oh, good point. You looking it up now?
Yeah. February 9th.
No way.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Oh, man.
So you're talking about me going in a day early?
Yeah. It's Sunday.
Yeah. Can you imagine the madness of Vegas during the Super Bowl? Who do you think's going to be in it, by the way? Obviously the Chiefs.
I think it's going to be Jets Bears.
Okay.
I'm very good at betting. Oh, by the way, a little follow-up. On the Tyson fight, I'm in Tennessee, and I'll make this quick. I'm in Tennessee, and Rabee and Gubbins are like, we want to bet on the fight. You're in Tennessee? I'm like, yeah. So I have the MGM app that works there. But I'm on a plane. People are still boarding. And I'm like, all right. And I'm like, if you bet 100 on Tyson, you win 190. And so I try to place the bet, and it literally told me, it looks like you're on an airplane. You can't place bets on airplanes.
Oh, no shit.
Even though, like, I'm fixed to the gate. It's not like I'm flying or even rolling. So anyway, I then go, I'll take your money, because I knew Tyson wasn't going to win. So anyway, I was going to give those guys like 150 or 170, and then they chickened out. But then Gubbins did bet. So I bet Gubbins. I took his bet. He bet on Tyson. I think we decided $50 and I'd give him back 90 or whatever it is. And it was so sad. I go, I'm not taking your money.
Oh, I would have taken that money in a second.
So, no, I'd rather he owes me in a way.
Yeah, that's good. All right, let's get some crinkling going. We're getting to the front page. Let's do it.
I have a crinkle. I have this great letter about Miles Davis. Doug, you are providing the crinkles today. Here we go, Doug. Thank you. Crinkles brought by Doug.
Extra! Extra! We all about it! Extra!
All right. In the wake of the U.S. presidential election, one cruise company is offering travelers a getaway for the length of one term in office. The residential cruise operator allows travelers to join a trip around the world for between 1 and 4 years. The company's ship aims to circumnavigate the globe every 3.5 years with stops in more than 400 destinations. The program currently starts at less than $40,000 each year based on a 4-year commitment. So people who are choosing to do this, they have two choices: stay in America under Trump or have continual diarrhea for 4 years. And they are choosing the diarrhea.
There's no way that boat is lasting that long. Yeah. And also, I don't know the passengers will last that long. 1,200 whiny liberals on a boat together for 4 years. I think it'll backfire. I think the ship's going to come back so right wing that they're going to use the boat to round up and deport immigrants on it. There's going to be a MAGA flag hanging on board that ship by the time they get back.
You know how boats have a no wake zone? This should be a no woke zone. Yeah. That should be the rule.
There you go. Yeah. I feel bad for the comedian who's going to be on board. Can you imagine how sick they're going to be of his fucking jokes after 2 years? 4 years?
Well, so this is in year even now, it hasn't even started. Every morning, like, wait, what happened? Like,
yeah,
that's how every morning starts on that cruise. Wait, what's going on back home?
Well, that's the thing, is that this only works if everybody blocks out all their communication for 4 years. Otherwise, you're just going to feel that much less, engaged.
Yeah, so much for the act local and a way that you can actually take this loss, learn from it, and change things and work on the midterm elections if that's what you want. You're going to act local. You're going to be in coves all over the world and in harbors.
Massachusetts' highest court ruled Thursday that hearings for the alleged customers of an upscale brothel network that operated out of Cambridge and Virginia will be open to the public. Clients include politicians, executives, doctors, military officers, government contractors, professors, and scientists. Acting U.S. Attorney Joshua Levy's office said that when the brothels were raided last year, over two dozen Johns have been fighting in court to keep their identity secret. The perpetrators advertised the brothels on two websites offering nude models that were fronts for the sex ring, rates ranging from $350 to $600 an hour in cash. Well, as usual, it looks like the Red Sox were going to have a happy ending, but that turned out to be a terrible ending.
How do you like them apples, Harvard, with your Cambridge brothel? So it's $400 an hour now, but it's $800 an hour later when you have to hire a lawyer to keep this hush-hush.
Oh, my God.
Do not disclose it. Look at this. Look at the economy.
Dude, you hear about the fucking brothel. They broke it up, dude.
You used your real name, bro. No.
Bro, I said my name was Smitty. All right. A husband and a father of three who vanished at a Wisconsin lake this summer may have faked his own death and fled to Eastern Europe. And the sheriff the case began on the morning of August 12th when this guy, Borgwart.
That name belongs in Eastern Europe.
He belongs in the bottom of a lake. He last texted his wife on August 11th saying he was turning his kayak around and heading to the shore soon. They later found his overturned kayak and life jacket in the lake, and they found his fishing rod and tackle box. They believe the missing dad drowned, and they scoured the lake using divers, drones, sonar, and cadaver canines. Jesus.
54 days.
Search continued for 54 days. They methodically searched 1,500 acres, and it took a turn in October when they discovered Borgwart's name had been checked by law enforcement in Canada on August 13th. Yeah, when your name is Borgwart and you're faking your own death, may want to switch it up a little bit. It showed up in Canada, and he was communicating with a woman from Uzbekistan. She was number one prostitute in Uzbekistan. Other behavior included clearing the browsers the day he disappeared. Never do that. Never clear your browser. You can clear individual websites, gentlemen, friends. Never clear the whole browser. He was also moving funds to foreign banks, getting a new life insurance policy, getting a new passport. I think they smelled a rat when the life insurance policy paid out to him.
Also, you missed, they did daily, for 54 days, daily drone searches. Like, okay, how about this? You find a married guy who has cleared his browser and done this stuff, you just need one drone search just so you can say you did it.
Right,
the guy's
right.
Not in the lake. He just is like, not in the lake.
Just like a Radio Shack drone does a lap until the battery dies and it plunges in the water. Like, and also, like, if this guy's trying this hard to get away, I say arrest the wife. Clearly, she's making his life a living hell. Why did nobody play that angle? She's the criminal.
Yeah, exactly.
There's another missing man story. A missing Indiana man has been found dead inside of a tanning bed at a Planet Fitness in Indianapolis. The man's been identified as 39-year-old Derek Sink. Sync has been missing for days. Elizabeth N., who is the Planet Fitness, who was at Planet Fitness before police arrived, said there was a powerful foul odor throughout the gym.
That's every Planet Fitness.
Right. Yeah, track that down.
Yeah.
And it was strongest near the tanning rooms. Sync had issues with drugs and wore an ankle monitor, his family told the station, adding that the monitor's activity showed he never left the gym after he entered on Friday. Planet Fitness says it is aware of the incident and is in contact with franchisee to make sure the gym's chain rules and regulations are being followed. Yeah. And at the funeral, people are looking in the casket. They're like, it looks good. Tan. Yeah. Tan.
It's like fat. Tan dead looks better than pasty dead. Just does.
Right, right, right. And by the way, it's a good thing this guy was not Irish or the health club would have gone up in flames.
That's true. It's like you're a fork in a microwave. Yeah.
How'd you like to be the guy who has to take the ankle monitor off in front of his wife? Sorry, ma'am. State property.
But it should be noted, most dudes who use a tanning bed have an ankle monitor, I think.
Yes.
I think that's the demo.
Yeah.
But he does look good. And the funeral, they announced, will be open tanning bed.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. It's a theme. A theme funeral.
Yeah. A report of a swastika flag being displayed at a home okay. in Montgomery County, which I think is Philly, Florida.
Yep, it is.
Is
a suburb.
Sparked outrage. The swastika flag is no longer flying outside the home. The American flag has since replaced it. There's a metaphor. CBS News Philadelphia attempted to ask the people who live in the home what motivated them to fly a symbol of hate. A man who answered the door told us to leave. Well, why not talk to the press? Clearly, you want to make a statement, right? Make your fucking statement.
Here's a statement. Murder, swastika. Murder. Like murder, dirter, swastika. Turns out, even despite all of this, that man is the least angry and hateful person in the Philadelphia area.
Oh, Mike, why? Why the Philly hate? Why?
At least he's honest. He's up front. Actually, they're all up front. That's the problem.
I think we've been clean so far. I don't think we've said anything to get thrown us off the algorithm.
All right. I do want to bring up. So Greg texted me and goes, hey, here's the doc. Sends me the link to the Google Doc. He's like, I loaded 8 stories in it. So I then put the first story about the cruise, the 4-year cruise. Then here come the stories. Brothel, missing guy who faked his own death to get away from his wife. Another missing guy, swastika. Now let's go on to the next story.
A woman has died 2 days after being thrown from a golf cart near a private members-only club in Maryland.
Yeah.
It occurred when they received a call of an injured person in Annapolis, Maryland. Authorities said that Mary Blasetti, a 32-year-old woman, sustained life-threatening injuries in an incident involving an easy-go golf cart. Not so easy that day. Police did not identify the driver, but confirmed it was a 32-year-old woman from Crownsville, Maryland, who was uninjured in the incident and was apprehended 3 holes later holding a 6-iron from about 150 yards out.
Listen, her funeral is going to be thrown in conjunction with the guy in the tanning bed because these are the whitest deaths I've ever heard of.
Yeah, right. Yeah, bury her in a tanning salon also.
Yeah.
When I was a caddy at Knollwood Country Club in White Plains, New York, there was a guy named Mark Brennan who loved me. He was a member. And there was a thing called putter caddying, which means that all 4 guys are in golf carts and you carry the putters. And all your job is to get up in front of the group and make sure you find their balls. If they, wherever they are, they come up, you show them where their balls are. You show them, you rake the traps. You show them how their putts are going to break. You pull the pin. It's a pretty easy gig. It's a lot better than carrying 2 big fucking leather Rodney Dangerfield bags all day. So this guy, Mark Brennan, loved me. So he used to let me drive the cart like one of the guys would walk and Mark Brennan would sit in the passenger seat and I would drive the cart and I drove like a fucking maniac. And at one point I drove us over a sand trap and the cart flipped. It went did like 180 degrees and we dove out and the clubs fucking sprawled all over the course. And he just started laughing his ass off. He's like, "You're out of your fucking mind."
More stitches for young Greg Fitzsimmons.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Wait, just for a second. I'm not a country club golf guy, right? So, or a country club guy. How? So you're a member of the club. Are caddies mandatory?
Yes, because it speeds up play. It keeps everybody moving.
All right. How much do you tip out caddies?
When I was a caddy, it was $10 flat rate. A bad tipper gave you $2. A good tipper gave you $5. So wait a minute.
So it was $5 or $2 on top of 10?
Yeah.
And how many caddies?
Well, I would carry two bags. So if I carried two bags and I had two bad tippers, for 5 hours work, I would make $24.
No, but I'm thinking, I forget the caddies. I'm thinking how much, like, you know, four dudes go out in a country club or two guys go out. What, you just get one caddy even though you're the putter caddy?
No, that's when there's golf carts. You only get a putter caddy if all four guys are in golf carts. So now you're not only paying for a golf cart, you're also paying for a guy. They also call it a four caddy because he's up ahead, four in front of you.
Right.
And
it just seems like you're paying already this expensive membership. Like, and man, that adds up.
And then, but what?
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
$12? No, nowadays.
No, well, I'm thinking there's also, isn't there another caddy, like, you know, other than you, the lunatic, who's out front doing reconnaissance?
No. The other guys are in golf carts. There's one caddy.
Okay.
And two golf. And then, but nowadays, it's like $100. And at really good clubs, it's like $150 for a caddy. For one guy.
I know.
So the caddy's actually making, you know, there's another thing where you do where there's a cart. So you're carrying two bags, and then the other two golfers are in a golf cart. So you get their two putters. So they're going to pay you, I don't know what the rate is for that, but probably $30 or $40 each, maybe $50 each.
Yeah.
And then the two bags are paying you $100 to $150 each. So you could be making $400 on a round.
Yeah, I hate playing with a caddy. I've been forced to once when my dad and I went to someone's club, and it's like I don't know. You just feel obligated. You're like I don't know. I have the wrong attitude about
it. Well, I like it because they show you know what club to hit. They tell you don't go for it here. There's a lake at the bottom of the hill. There's stuff that you don't know about the course. They tell you how to read the green on your putts. But no, it feels a little bougie.
No, and of course, the first time with Kat, when they're like, "I'd aim here with your putt and this," and I'm like, "Yeah, that guy doesn't, he doesn't," and then I don't do it, and the guy was exactly right.
Yeah. But I wrote my first project I ever sold in Hollywood was a sitcom script called Caddies, and it was based on all the caddies from the yard that I started out at. There was a guy named PGA Jack who lived in his car, and there was, and I was young. I was like 13 when I started there. And there was rumors that he had a dead body in his trunk, and he was really weird, and he sat by himself. And then there was One Arm Willie, who was this old black guy from Louisiana who had one arm. And there was Killer Kalaki.
I guess that part.
There was Killer Kalaki, who was this Irish kid from the Yonkers who tried to get into the Marines twice, but they thought he was too intense. And so he was...
You tore your coworker's arm off. You can't come in the Marines.
Right. And he used to be like standing under a tree and a plane would go by and he'd be like tracking the plane with the putter like it was a rifle.
Yeah, that's the caddy I want. Really eases my nerves out there.
He texts me to this day. I get DMs from Killer Kalaki all the time.
I can't believe he has a working phone.
Yeah.
Here's another one of your stories.
And then there was another guy. Let me just say there's one other guy named Nicky who had a motorcycle, and he started banging. One of the members had like a 15-year-old daughter, and he was banging her. And he pulled up one day to the club with her on the back, and the guy chased him with a driver in his hand.
Wow.
He never worked there again.
That is good material.
Gates, shortly after Donald Trump made the shocking announcement to nominate Representative Matt Gaetz for Attorney General. It's mind-boggling.
It's unbelievable.
House Speaker Mike Johnson announced that Gaetz had already resigned from his congressional seat. This was 2 days before the Ethics Committee was set to vote on releasing a report outlining its multi-year investigation into the Republican over his alleged sexual misconduct and drug use. Basically they lost their jurisdiction over him and they had to end the investigation.
Right.
So,
this is Mike Johnson, a deeply religious and spiritual man. And I guess this, sexual misconduct should not even be looked into now at all.
Yeah. So they said that, there was sexual misconduct, sharing inappropriate images or videos on the House floor. And converting
the people's house, by the way, the people's house,
and converting campaign funds for personal use. This is an attorney general nominee who could not pass a background check.
Right. Now, listen, in terms of pornographic material, I call my apartment the people's house, but I have a different set of rules here. I'm allowed to do it.
Well,
there's full disclosure. It's out in the open.
Well, so is the comic I'm working with this week. I don't know why this dawned on me, but I think it's because he shared inappropriate images with me on his phone with the girl that was visiting him this weekend. He engaged in sexual conduct, not misconduct, but sexual conduct, and is not claiming his income from T-shirts after the show to the IRS.
Well, now they're going to come for this guy, especially Gaetz, who is a by-the-book, I think, religious.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. The satirical website The Onion purchased InfoWars on Thursday.
Best story of the week.
A capstone on years of litigation and bankruptcy proceedings following InfoWars founder Alex Jones' defamation of families associated with the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre. Those families backed The Onion's bid to purchase InfoWars intellectual property, including its website, customer lists, and inventory, certain social media accounts, and the production equipment used to put Jones on the air.
I love it.
Gee, where'd they get all the money?
Yeah.
The Connecticut families agreed to forego a portion of their recovery to increase the overall value of The Onion's bid, enabling its success. The family said the purchase would put an end to Jones' misinformation campaign.
I love it. You know, Dickie sent me an article that the rather recent head of The Onion is a self-described masshole, and it's that massholeness about him. This is
Ben Carlin. Is that his name?
No. Ben Carlin used to be at The Onion. He went to Wisconsin. He was a Daily Show writer, and he's a Hollywood guy we know. No. This is new ownership. and he goes, it's that massholeness that, like, made him like go forward with this plan. It's such a great way to undermine this and really did it with the families, as you said. Like, he met with them and then they did an arrangement. And you know, after every school shooting, I love The Onion uses the state. They, I don't think, or rarely repeat headlines, but this one they do. They said, the headline is, "No way to prevent this, says only nation where this regularly happens."
Yeah. That always hits. It hits every time.
It's so absurd.
All right,
I just looked up, and I know you have some, but this came across right before we started the podcast. The Onion is just so great. If you don't follow them, it's just a picture of a doorknob on a door, and he goes, "Report. Mom just locked her door." That's all it says. And it's like, according to reports from stunned Melberg family sources, Mom just walked up the stairs, slammed the door to her bedroom, and locked it. And then it goes on about the shocking incident occurred shortly before dinner time in the Melberg home. Mom had reportedly been silently chopping vegetables, and it just, with no signs of anger. It's just, they're so, so funny.
Here's one. Area stoner to spend day in bed.
Yes. Worthy of a headline.
Area bassist filleted.
That's a little tease to Phil Lesh coming up.
Archaeologists uncover spooky race of skeleton people.
They're just great.
Botched real boy operation leaves Pinocchio fighting for life.
I remember we were reading, like, is it a real Onion headline or not? And we did it. Whoa, AI.
AI
wrote Onion headlines, and we actually sniffed out which ones were real.
Every single one.
Alarmingly high rate.
Right, right. All right, that's enough of those.
Let's get to entertainment.
Yeah.
Here we go. Again, another crinkle watching my dog.
All right, so lately we had a lot of people say that they're really enjoying our recommendations, that we hadn't done it for a while, so we're just going to catch you up on what we're watching. I want to go back. My son just started watching a show that he said he is obsessed with, and I remember being absolutely taken by how profound and moving, and the acting is incredible. This show called Normal People.
It's amazing.
It's an Irish
we're building
show.
It up too much, probably.
Not a lot happens. It's just moody and well acted. That's all I'll say. It's called Normal
right.
People.
Like, I was watching it, and, you know, I'm not like, you know, I'm watching The Wire, right? And I tend to have a list of things that, like, society or whatever culture has said, like, you know, you have to watch it. It's like a high point of TV. So I do a lot of that, and it'll be Breaking Bad, Sopranos, and all that. Normally, it's not a little show. This is a little show in Ireland. And it's about a couple, and my daughters recommended it to me, but I watched it, I was alone, and I found myself like, no, like out loud saying like, call her, like I am so invested in this relationship.
Yeah.
And it's subtle. It's really subtle.
Yeah, it moves slow and it's subtle, but it's incredible. Speaking of rewatching, I started rewatching Breaking Bad and I finished season one because I just said to myself, I'm looking for shows to watch. Meanwhile, I've never watched Breaking Bad for a second time. And so I'm in the green room last night and the fight ends and I've still got like an hour before I go on. And so I've got Netflix on. So I put on season 2, episode 1. And the writing is so insane. That guy Chucho, he like beats the shit out of his friend and kills him right in front of them after they sell them a bag of meth.
Right.
And Walter White is so freaked out. And so he goes home, he walks in the door, and his wife is calling his name and he can't hear her because it's just static in his brain. He's so freaked out. And then he turns around and he comes in the kitchen and she's like 8 months pregnant. She's got on a green facial mask and he comes up behind her and he starts rubbing against her and she kind of giggles. And then he starts rubbing harder and he pulls up her bathrobe and she's like, no, Walter, no. And he begins to rape her. And then she like pulls away and screams. And then he walks outside and just think, Jesus Christ, this was in the beginning of season 2.
I forgot that scene.
Who comes up with shit like that?
You should, since you're watching it the second time, you should track the color schemes.
Oh, I just threw us off the algorithm.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
Maybe we bleep that R word.
All right.
Let's bleep it. You didn't need it. He was going to assault her.
Yeah, he was
going
to assault
in a
her.
Sexual way.
Yeah.
And maybe that got us off too. Whoop, not that phrase. So the color schemes were important as his transformation happens. I remember the beginnings, and a lot of people wrote about this, but like were greens and yellows and browns, and they become much harder colors as his transformation undergoes from season to season. So keep an eye on that. All the color palettes, even of like places, like, you know, his living room and all that. But I remember him being very greens. I think he had a green shirt in the pilot.
And, yeah, and what color is the car? Isn't it like, I know it's a weird color.
Is it yellow?
Yeah, I think it's yellow.
But keep an eye on that, because that show, they thought, you know, of everything. You know, I just told, I'm teaching this sitcom writing class, but we're talking about TV series. And I told them the story that, you know, when I, and I think a lot of people can relate, but when I was married, you know, our lives were just very separate. Now, my marriage didn't work out, but it, a lot of people have this existence where, you know, it's like dinner and then like, well, I'm going to watch my shows and you're going to go watch your piece of shit Grey's Anatomy or whatever it is. And so at that time, I was watching Breaking Bad. And my point to the students was, I left out some marital details, but the point was you should always know why you're watching something. And with any work of art, like it should answer the question, why am I watching this? And so, and in any point in your script, I tell them, you should be like, well, why is he doing that? Why do I care? Like, what's at stake and all that? So I was working at ABC. I'll move this along. I was working at ABC and it was almost all when we were coming up with an alternative, funny alternative to The View. And the women all came in and like, oh my God, there's a new show. It's better than The Sopranos. I'm like, I'm listening. And it was Orange is the New Black. So they couldn't stop talking about how great it was. So I go home non-judgmentally and then I go, hey, listen, I have an idea. We're so separate. Let's find a show that we can watch together. I just heard about this show that these people at work are calling better than The Sopranos. So we watched the pilot and I liked it. Great hook, really good premise. And she goes to jail. And by like episode 4, they show this like random like fucking rooster running around the prison, which has nothing to do with any of the plots that have been established. And basically I'm like, and then it came back. And even then I'm like, I kind of don't know why I'm watching. I don't know why I'm hanging on and what I want to see. What are the characters' wants? And I realized, and this is the end of the long diatribe here, is you can't watch anything else and like it when you're watching Breaking Bad. Because at any minute in the entire series of Breaking Bad, why am I watching? It's like, why am I watching? How much time do you have? Will the cancer get him? Will his wife get him? Will his brother-in-law get him? Will his assistant like blow shit up in the meth lab?
Will his family get killed by, you know, the cartel?
The cartel's coming. Are they going to get, like, there were, one page wasn't enough room to write all the things I was terrified about learning, which I had to learn.
There's the other thing about Orange is the New Black is it was a false start. You know, that like a pilot should show you what the series is going to be. And Orange is the New Black, it was about her on the outside. And you get this husband character and their relationship is very interesting. And then all of a sudden, it's a show about prison by episode 3.
No,
anyway, here's a great, they're doing a lot of great docuseries. I talked about the Vince McMahon one is amazing, especially if you, well, not just especially, I guess obviously if you love WWE, you'll love it. But as somebody that had very little knowledge of WWE, it was an immersive, I like a docuseries where I learn a lot about a world I didn't know about. And there's another one called, it's about Martha Stewart. And I mean, obviously we all know Martha Stewart, but how well did we really know her? We kind of knew, you know, rumors that she was a bitch, but did we know that she grew up the youngest of 7 in a poor house in New Jersey where there wasn't enough food? And did we know that she was a model while she got a scholarship to Barnard College? And did we know that, you know, she was married to a guy who she cheated on her honeymoon? I mean, it's like really fascinating. And,
I didn't know the honeymoon detail. Yeah. I did see a clip where she's talking about it, and then he like cheated on me. And then that was it. Like that's what anybody, and then the off camera voice, like a director is like, but didn't you cheat on him? She's like, oh, in the beginning, but that like.
Yeah,
That's how those people get where they are, including Trump. Like, there's a wake of destruction behind them, but they do not think about that.
Right.
They just keep moving forward.
That's right. There's also a new series I can't wait to watch called Say Nothing, which is based on the book, which I read. It's one of the best books I've read in the last 10 years, and it's about the Troubles.
Wow.
It's about the Troubles in Northern Ireland in the 70s when the paramilitary from England came over and started policing the Irish, the IRA. And it's about this woman, Dolores, who with her sister are IRA agents. And it's fucking so heroic and amazing. And I can't wait to see the series. So we'll be talking about that. If you want to watch it in the next week, then we'll probably be talking about it next week.
We're talking about Say Nothing, but I thought I screen grabbed it. Anyway, there's another one that the Irish guy, oh, by the way, the guy from Normal People, the Irish actor, who the two of them were astounding. He's in Gladiator, too.
I heard about that, yeah.
He's in the new Gladiator, and then they asked him if you had one Irish movie, because I guess he was promoting one, maybe. What would it be? And let me see if I can quickly find it. I thought I saved it. And I want to see if you saw it. But it's about the revolution. It's about, here it is. Oh, he's on the, when,
sung the praises of my left foot.
The hot sauce.
The wind that shakes the
my left foot.
The wind that shakes the barley.
Oh, that's an incredible movie.
That's what he said.
It's a lot of people's favorite.
On the hot wing.
Yeah, it's a lot of people's favorite movie about that. And that's also got a really sweet love story in it, but it's also about...
I have to see it. I've seen no Irish movies.
Well, My Left Foot is obviously, I would
say,
maybe my favorite Irish movie of all time. That's incredible.
And would he be allowed to play that role now? All right, I'm watching, speaking of body parts that are missing, Chimp Crazy. Do you know about Chimp Crazy?
No, I don't.
All right. A lot of our listeners, I think, have already digested it. It was like number one on Netflix. It has not left the top 10. And it's about people who have chimpanzees as pets. And by people, I mean crazy women. And just stay with it. It's longer than it needs to be. I kept thinking, like, is this over 3 episodes? No way. But boy, there's real juicy stuff towards the end.
Okay. Can't
juicy
wait.
Juicy is definitely the wrong word to use. But here's the little, listen, if you don't have time to watch it and you're considering getting a chimpanzee, here's my advice to you. You got to have plans on getting rid of the chimp at around 10 years old, probably before. But there is a hard line somewhere in those years, around probably 7 to 10, where it is no longer a cute idea.
Okay. Now, do some of these women live in Florida?
At least 2.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yes. But one of the most disturbing ones, and I remember it. And also, I was falling asleep watching it. And I'm like, wait, what crazy woman is this? And it was Connecticut. I'm like, wait, oh, because it bounces around a lot to show you this is not one Florida woman who's lost her mind. Like, this is a thing that happens in the U.S. And anyway, I had to keep track. This is how I kept track of the crazy women: by their monkey's name, by their chimpanzee's name. So Travis, let's just say they're... Travis gets pretty active as he gets older, and he's in Connecticut. And I remember that story.
Right. Speaking of Florida.
Let's do it. Here we go with Doug's paper. Florida man should have hid his cocaine before calling deputies to report a break-in and battery. A group of juveniles had been aggravating and harassing 54-year-old Everett Brown. A 14-year-old recently kicked in Brown's door and hit him with a red broom handle.
Oh, that's specific.
I don't know why we needed red. Yeah, Brown. Well, here we read a lot of colors. Brown called the sheriff's office and deputies went out to investigate. While deputies were investigating and processing the scene, they saw Brown's cocaine and paraphernalia in plain view in the house, so he went to jail for possession of cocaine and paraphernalia.
Should have used that red broom to get rid of the cocaine.
Sweep that shit under the rug, man.
I mean, I got to tell you, this guy's a Florida man, and he's got to be rueful about the, you know, these kids today, they just break in and steal your cocaine. Why, in my day, a Florida kid would go down under the pier in Pismo Beach and give a Florida man hand jobs to get his own cocaine.
Also, dude, your alibi was right there. Like, they brought that. They broke in. I've already told you they broke in. I didn't put that there.
Yeah.
You don't think a lawyer could run with that? You can't 100% now say it's his cocaine.
Here's the thing.
I did it for 3 weeks, but the kids brought it in here.
This guy was gay. I guarantee that because when I moved into, do you remember that apartment I had on like 9th Avenue and 26th Street?
You owned it.
No. That was on 16th and 6th. No, there was one I rented, and it was in a very tough neighborhood of Chelsea. It was all housing projects, but the apartment itself was nice on the inside. So it was like, I remember Jim Brewer came over one day, and we were talking about how women, all they care about is the inside of an apartment. He's like, he'll be inside, and he'll be like, and this is shabby chic, and those are recessed lightings, and gunshots are coming through the window.
Exactly.
I got the apartment cheap because the guy who owned it before me, and this was all over the New York Post for weeks. This was a big story. The guy was a gay guy who did cocaine, and he used to invite kids from the projects into his apartment, and he'd give them blow, and he'd try to have sex with them. And so at one point, they came into his apartment.
Found the apartment.
They took all the cocaine. They took all the cocaine, and they killed him, and they put him in a bathtub, and they cut his throat. And they left the water running, and then they left with the cocaine. And so apparently they found out because the apartment underneath had blood, watery blood dripping through their ceiling. And it was called the Chelsea Bloodbath. That was the name of the crime. That's what the Post called it. I rented that apartment for a song.
And how many self-pleasuring experiences did you have in that bathtub, in the shower,
with the water running? I let it flow right over the top,
and the neighbors complaining because now your stuff mixed with the water is now leaking. It's worse than the blood.
Actually, my cum from the water and worked as caulk. It worked as caulk, and it's sealed up.
Caulk.
Yeah, caulk.
All right, let's make Kentucky, Florida. Here we go. A Kentucky man who threatened a federal agent the day after being sentenced for an earlier threat against the same officer has been given another 5 years and 3 months in prison. Okay. This Kentucky's man, I've rewritten the story. And you're going to guess at the end, okay? I left it blank. So here we go. So this Kentucky man's son, it's a bad story. He killed his girlfriend. But it's not about his son and that crime. The lead investigator on the case against his son was Todd Tremaine, a senior special agent. Well, the dad did not like Todd. The dad threatened Todd, saying he had watched Todd's house, described his wife and one of their vehicles, and said he knew the times that Todd's family walked their dog. This is against the cop. He also added that he had 4 sticks of dynamite, quote, that will do a lot. So the police arrested the dad, and he pled guilty to all of that. The next day, after being transferred to prison, the dad threatened him again, according to the court record. So I've made the ink white so you can't see it. I want you to guess, how do you up it from, I know your wife, I know you, here's your car, and I know when you walk your dog. What do you think the next threat was? And by the way, dynamite, which can do a lot.
The next threat would be that he is going to blow up the dog.
You know, you're not that, you're not there, but it's in that neighborhood, kind of. Here it is. You ready? I'm going to now highlight this. He threatened to have the agent sodomized by a farm animal, and then he made a gesture indicating he would shoot Todd with a pistol. Where do you go after dynamite? Farm animal.
How do you get a farm animal to sodomize somebody? If it's a horse, do you dress the police officer up as a female horse and put pheromones on it?
You just put it in one of those horse breeding contraptions that the horse mounts.
Right, that's good. Yep.
Yeah. A goat? I don't know how you get a goat to sodomize a police officer.
Take a goat over a horse.
What does the algorithm think of the word sodomize?
We're off. If the listeners are wondering, we get very, very little money from YouTube because they constantly knock us off the algorithm because of our content. And we tried this week to not do it, and we lasted not long.
But YouTube... I'm reading a newspaper where it's in quotes, sodomized by a farm animal.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
It's a technical term. I mean, so is the R word, but all right.
Let's get to sports.
Sports, here we go. Well. We already kind of did sports. I mean, check. I'm going to call it a girl fight. I know that's wrong. And not appropriate, but check out the girl fight.
There's also
women's boxing.
There's also a story. The biggest game of the NFL season is upon us as the Kansas City Chiefs travel to Buffalo to face the Bills on Sunday. So Travis Kelce's girlfriend, Taylor Swift, who's nearing the end of her two-year tour, is also having a big concert that day or that night. So the game's during the day, and then she's got a game that night. And, of course, Kansas City Chiefs, there are so many conspiracy theories about every time there's a call that helps the Chiefs. People are saying that, you know, the NFL is in on this thing to get, you know, because they get such good ratings to get them into the Super Bowl.
He is very protected. Let's just say that.
Yes, he is. But I don't.
So is Brady.
But I don't think they're, like, putting the NFL schedule around Taylor Swift's, even though when she's at a game, the ratings, I don't know. Maybe somebody can look this up and tell me how much bigger NFL ratings are when Taylor Swift is in the audience.
Well, let's see when she does her Australian tour, and all of a sudden there's 8 NFL games down in Australia.
Oh, she will be at that same stadium. One day after, she will have played 3 consecutive shows in Toronto. All right, Toronto, so not even in the same place. I guess Toronto
very,
is near Buffalo.
Very close, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, one of the things with the girl fight, back to that for a second, one of the greatest parts about it, and I hope this comes true, forget any other men. Everyone will want to see this rematch. You'll see when you watch it. It's like a cobra and a mongoose. Everyone will want to see this rematch, and I hope they make tons of money.
Good.
And Netflix should do it again live.
Women's
mean, it was
sports.
So successful.
Starting to make money in women's sports. All right, let's get through this day in history real quick. Just give me a few because we're running a little bit late.
We are running late. I got to go to an upholstery shop. What a day I have. Okay, here we go. This day in history. Which one should I start with? You would know that. Okay, Jonestown Massacre. Jim Jones, leader of the People's Temple, religious community that he formed in the 50s, and some 900 of his followers died this day in Guyana in a massive act of murder-suicide known as the Jonestown Massacre. Give or take 4 years. What year did the Jonestown Massacre happen?
1979.
You bastard. 78.
Nice.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I remember being young.
Gregory, speaking of you being young, the first push button touch tone telephone debuted in the United States, eventually replacing most rotary dial models. But have you seen, I keep saying by the way so much, have you seen the TikTok and Instagram clips of a parent saying, call your friend on this phone, and it's a dial phone? And no. What we didn't realize is we had a manual machine that was like triggering magnet. Like we were, it was like rotating a dial, manually rotating a dial.
Yeah.
Anyway, the kids have no clue how to dial
That's
a phone.
That's hilarious. So, well, obviously I
hold on, give or take 3 years. I'm giving you a 7-year window.
All right. So I grew up dialing a phone. Obviously I remember that. And I'm wondering, did I move out for college before? Yeah, obviously I did. So it was probably around high school. I'm going to go with the same number. I'm going to go with 83.
1963.
No.
They're always earlier.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but that was probably some geek had it in his basement when he lived with his mother. That wasn't out to the general public until the general public probably got the push-button phone in 1977. That's my guess.
Well, Greg, words have meaning, and it was debut. When did the touch-tone phone debut?
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Great.
All right, you want to do one more or two more? I have two more.
One more.
One more quick one. We're going to go. Whoa. Here we go. Walt Disney released Steamboat Willie, the first animated film with sound to feature Mickey Mouse. The huge success of the cartoon helped make Mickey an iconic character and led to the Disney company's dominance in the animated market. Give or take 10 years, when did Walt Disney release Steamboat Willie?
1927.
Good Lord, 1928. How did you guess so early? I gave you a 21-year window.
I was thinking about when talkies started. I knew it was before talkies. And movies, I figured, probably started in like 1921.
All right, I don't feel good. We're doing one more. The American dramatic film Ben-Hur, arguably the best of Hollywood's biblical epics, had its world premiere and later won an unprecedented 11 Academy Awards. Give or take 4 years, when did Ben-Hur hit the theaters?
1962.
Shit! 1959.
Nice.
You did it, man.
I was on fire today.
All right. We don't have to do China's robotic dog. I'll save it for next week.
Okay.
But oh boy.
Okay, let's do obituaries.
Obituaries, here we go. Oh man, less is more, or really less is no more. This happened a few days before Halloween, but we have a lot of fans who listen to us go on and on about music. Phil Lesh, the bassist who anchored the Grateful Dead, he was 84 years old. The New York Times said one of the first rock bassists whose instrument regularly took a lead role. He also had a hand in writing some of the band's best songs. In addition to providing explorative bass work, Mr. Lesh sang high harmonies for the band and provided the occasional lead vocal. He also co-wrote some of the band's most noteworthy songs, including ones that inspired adventurous jams like St. Stephen, Dark Star, Cumberland Blues, Truckin' and Box of Rain. Oh, sorry. The last ones are, they call more conventional pieces like Cumberland Blues, Truckin' and Box of Rain. And it was very cool. I saw clips that, you know, went pretty viral of that night after the news that Phish took the stage and just right into Box of Rain as their opening song.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. Yeah. I saw the Dead last year and he did not perform with them. I don't know if there was a falling out or he was doing his own thing or maybe he was just sick, but he wasn't playing with them.
Wait, so I remember what?
He's 84, so I don't think the other guys are that old. I think he must have been one of the older members of the band.
Maybe, yeah. I wonder how Jerry Garcia would be now. Was Jerry born around 1940? I wonder. I'll look up Jerry. But
I know Bob Weir was the baby in the band.
Yeah. But I just remember like really tripping at a lot of these concerts, and he was very grounding for me. Like when I thought like, oh boy, you've overdone it, and you're feeling really, you know, Weir's not going to help me ground myself in his weird jean shorts, you know, outdoor stadiums. But Lesh was just such a like kind of sober, grounded energy. Jerry Garcia was born in 42.
Okay, so he would have been 82, and Bob Weir is only 77. There's a great documentary about Bob Weir, and it shows him like as a little, he was like a 16-year-old kid playing with the Dead.
So young.
I mean, I don't even think they were called the Dead then. They were just like jamming at that house in Haight-Ashbury.
Let's get to the funnies. Let's cheer up.
All right, so we're doing the caption contest. Obviously, whoever has the best caption wins a koozie, which you can expect imminently.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And, well, I just got a bunch in.
All right, good.
I just got a bunch
in.
Did
you
really?
You got more in? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, listen. This is serious. The caption contest has been very popular. I can't get to them all. I can't put them all in the script. I read them all. Try to do my best to get the best ones in. I'm not always 100%, so if yours is missing, my apologies. Keep sending them in. Last week's caption was a kid handing his piggy bank to a teller in a bank. Susie wrote, I'd like to exchange the contents of this piggy bank for one cheesy double beef burrito.
All right, Susie.
All right.
Okay, it's about what a kid would want. I get it.
Joanne said, can you fill this up? We need to call a plumber about a toilet baby. We always get a toilet baby submission.
Yeah. Is it really Joanne?
Yeah. I don't know if it's the Joanne.
It seems off-brand for the Joanne we know.
Yep. Ton from San Francisco said, this is my inheritance from Grandpa Mike. It was in a box marked Greg's Koozie Money. Yeah, can we talk about that? Can we talk about where the fuck my koozie money is?
Well, let me tell you. All right, how about this? If I don't Venmo you money for koozies, by next week I give you $100.
I love it. Okay, good.
So here's my choice.
On the record, $100.
Do I give you, so it's a pretty easy decision. Do I give you $100 or a lot more than $100?
Right.
No, I'm going to, that's my deadline. That's okay. What's going to keep me honest.
Okay. Tim Bagan said, screw my college fund. I'm going downtown and getting myself a hooker.
All right. He's a little young. It's inappropriate. It's inappropriate, Tim.
Well, this is more inappropriate. Lainey Lanowitz said, I look a lot older on OnlyFans.
Kind of funny.
Mike Markle said, this is my swear jar, fuckface.
I kind of like that one.
Steve says, here you go, Mr. Peepers. The elephant says it's full of Bitcoin, and the donkey says it has change we can believe in.
All right.
I have no idea what that means.
That's political.
I only put it in to see if you understood what that meant.
Yeah, it's political.
Devin Smith said, hey, can you put this in my friend's Mustang GoFundMe account?
Did we ever talk about your Mustang?
I think so. It got wrecked, and I'm waiting for it to come back to me. It's been 5 weeks.
Where is it? Caliber?
It's at Stagecrafts on Sepulveda. Steve says, the money might be sticky because I just fucked the slot.
Okay.
Ben Holdridge said, I don't know what a divorce lawyer is, but Daddy said I might as well start saving for one now.
Oh, negative outlook on life. Okay.
Poor Raya said, I made a sculpture of your wife.
It's just completely ignoring that it's a bank and a piggy bank.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
Zach from Yuma said, I filled it with sperm all by myself.
Another one, having sex with the pig.
Well, it's got that slot on top. Charlie Reitiger said, my dad says I should take this money to the bank before the other fat pig living in his house steals all my money too. Wording could have been a little better, but I
is that his mom he's talking about?
Ron Dvorak said, I stuck my finger in the pig's asshole. Now he's ready to shoot coins all over your face.
Oh, all right, Ron. I mean, I didn't know there was another slot. All right.
Rich Kennedy said, what do you mean you can't take my deposit? This piggy's half full. What kind of sperm bank are you running here?
A lot of sex came up in a very unsexual premise.
All right. There's two finalists in my mind. One of them is, this is my swear jar fuckface.
Yep.
And then the one that you really liked was I Made a Sculpture of Your Wife. Was that the one that you liked?
Yeah, you know, they're very similar in a way. It's a very rude kid. Let's go with the swear jar though, because that ties another level in.
Mike Markle, congratulations, fuckface. You just won a koozie and got us kicked off the algorithm.
So you have to send me. I rely on you to send me when Mike Markle sends you his address.
Yes, I do. I always send them on. Maybe sometimes people don't send them. I don't know.
And then I'll mail it in a way that will never get there.
All right. Next week's caption is, it looks like an angel with a halo over his head and wings. They're at the gates of heaven. Clouds are on the other side. He's got his arm around a man who's wearing a bathrobe, and the angel is talking to the man. What is he saying?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay.
Man, the man's listening.
Okay, let's get to your new obsession.
Here we go. Oh, no, I don't go first.
Oh, okay.
You can't rush Dilbert.
All right, Lockhorns. Leroy is asleep at his desk, and his boss is saying, when you said you could do this job in your sleep, Lockhorn, I didn't think you meant it literally.
Yeah, that's all right for a Lockhorn.
Leroy and Loretta are coming out of a palm reader, and she says, aren't you concerned she couldn't find a lifeline on you?
I like it.
Then we get to Hagar the Horrible. Hagar's talking to Lucky. There's a woman sitting at the bar next to them. She has a lime wedge on her glass, which I find hard to believe. Hagar says, Lucky Eddie, whatever happened to that raging redhead you were dating? And then the woman sitting next to Hagar, who has dark hair, said she dyed her hair.
I don't know if it's an insult, raging redhead. I guess it is.
Well, I just don't understand. First of all, why isn't Lucky sitting next to her? Hagar's in the middle. And secondly, why is a woman trying to make herself more attractive during medieval times? I mean, there's a reason why women started wearing burkas back then, to hide any skin from these animals.
Is a brunette more attractive than a redhead, you're saying?
Maybe that's what it is.
I don't know. Maybe she's just trying to change her hair color from Hagar's. Look at Hagar's hair, which is all over his face.
He looks like a Muppet. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's do some...
Here we go. I have not read it. This is a blind read. Again, I don't know if this is counting up from 1 to 10 or down, but here's number 2, because it started with 1. Okay, we have 3 frames, and the guy with the smack-your-bitch-up hairdo with the 2 cones on his head is talking to Dilbert. He's reading something to Dilbert. They're both at a desk. By the way, is Dilbert's tie always like that? It looks like
it's always up. Yeah, it's always up in the wind for some reason.
Oh. Okay, so the guy reads to Dilbert, according to the anonymous online employee survey, you don't trust management. What's up with that? The second frame is a complete waste of time where they just look at each other. And then the third frame is, oh, right, he says to Dilbert, and they move on. Okay. There it is.
Do you understand it?
I think it's that he doesn't trust that guy, the smack your bitch up guy, is management, and Dilbert doesn't trust him, so he's not going to entertain that question. Right?
But there's a period. You read it wrong. It's O period, right period.
I don't know if that changes anything.
Oh, I don't know either.
Right.
I'm just trying to look at it at another angle so I see the humor.
According to the anonymous online employee survey, you don't trust management. What's up with that? Well, maybe it's a play on it's anonymous. Maybe that's it. So he's like, oh, right. Meaning it's supposed to be anonymous. But if it's anonymous, how does he know it's his report?
No, I think his manager is just realizing that if he doesn't trust management, he's not going to answer the question. So he's saying
that was my first instinct, I'm trying to give it more credit because this is a world famous strip, and this is number 2 of 10 or 8 of 10?
People do go on about Dilbert. People think Dilbert is so smart. There have been ones that I really did find humorous when I was much younger.
We'll get to them. Let's move on.
All right, let's get to Blondie is wearing kind of a standard outfit, the velvet skirt down to her knee, a white top with black cuffs. Hair is tousled beautifully. Dagwood's walking out the door with his overcoat and his briefcase, and she goes, "Do you ever think about playing hooky and just taking the day off?" And he goes, "What a great idea." Takes off his coat, and he goes, "If I took the day off, just think of all the things I could get done around here." And she goes, "Now we're getting somewhere, honey." And now he's sitting on a chair, and he goes, like, binging all the shows on Netflix I've been wanting to catch up on. And she goes, "Well, that went nowhere fast." Yeah. Okay, here's my list, Dagwood, when I don't go to work that day.
I have a guess what your list is.
We start on the shoes. We get the shoes off. Get a foot massage. An oral foot massage. And then that top gets ripped off. But one tit at a time comes out. Because they each deserve to be worshipped on their own. Left first, then right. And then get in that ass, Dagwood. Get in that ass. Because you know she cleans it every morning. She gets in there with soap. She gets a finger in the hole with the soap. She gets out. She takes a baby wipe, gives it another wipe. That thing is ready.
This is a detailed breakdown.
All right.
How come you don't talk that way about Loretta? She's a blonde.
That's true. Or the redhead in Hagar the Horrible.
You don't think Loretta cleans the undercarriage?
Oh, God. Oh, Loretta's undercarriage is a mess.
Which is a lot more work. Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, speaking of work, watch these shows we told you to watch. We can catch up on them next week. There's also a second season of Bad Sisters is out, and it's also an Irish show. And also, I know it was all Irish today we talked about in the entertainment section. But Bad Sisters starred on season one. It is one of the best seasons of TV I've seen in a very long time.
One of the women fighters was Irish, and I think her opponent was Puerto Rican.
And one of the bad sisters is actually Bono's daughter, and she's very good.
Oh yeah, yeah. I started Bad Sisters, and then it's kind of like what happened to it's better than Orange Is the New Black, but I trailed off.
Yeah. All right. Thank
you. It happens.
Thank you to Midcoast Media for producing and editing and promoting the podcast. They do such a fine job, even though Denman doesn't join us any longer.
Well, listen, he's America's whole again. He is in such a good mood.
Yep.
He's running wild with it. Like,
well,
it's just a very optimistic time for him.
I don't think Denman runs, but he's going wild.
He's going wild.
All right. Well, I guess we'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah. Take it easy, everybody.
Take it easy.
The world is burning in every possible way, and the Sunday Papers podcast is only fuel for the flames.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.